Good morning. Today is Tuesday, August 15th. It's 9 o'clock a.m. for the general discussion in the board's conference room. We have Commissioners DeYoung and Morgan present, and Commissioner here will not be joining us today. And on the agenda today is a public works review, and followed by order number 2017-038 in the matter of adoption of Josephine County Public Works Design Construction Improvement Standard and Specifications Road Standards. So with that, we welcome you up to give us your presentation. Steve?
Yep.
Have you, for the record, introduce yourself just so they have it on the recording.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. Steve Toller, with a senior manager with Management Partners. It's great to be here today.
And Rob Randis, Public Works Director.
And Arthur O'Hare, Finance Director.
Well, thank you guys for being here. Sorry it's a short crowd, but I'm only 5'4", so can't get taller. Oh, sorry. I had to. No. No, but it's been a lot of work in a long time, so we're glad to get this here to kind of move forward with what's next.
Sure. Well, anyways,
I'll start.
Thank you so much. I presume that you've at least had an opportunity to receive a copy of the report that we had issued. And so today I just thought I'd go over some of the highlights of it. I prepared a PowerPoint presentation to just kind of really be more of just the discussion points and as we chat through this. We were hired to provide a report about our review, organizational review of the Public Works Department. And so, some things I'd like to talk about today is just setting that context, and we'll go through some of what our findings were and our recommendations for improvement, and then talk about next steps to implement that. We've met before. You understand who Management Partners is, and we do work across the United States in a variety of different capacities, and have a pretty deep bench when it comes to public works review, et cetera. And so there were several of our members of our team that participated.
And excuse me for interrupting, but do you want, I made a copy of this, write notes on. Would you?
Sure.
Would you like a paper copy?
No, I should just go ahead and keep those for yourself.
You know. It takes a while. Some people move fast.
Salty today.
Wait. Do you need some coffee?
Yeah. I should have picked you up better.
I probably should have.
We know already that Rob has told Commissioner DeYoung he should stop caffeine in the morning.
Yeah.
But if we need to help you get some.
We need to help you get up to speed. Order in some Dutch Brothers.
I've got some, Costco Keurig stuff back there. So, all right.
No, we're good. Sorry for interrupting, but I thought if we take notes, it might be helpful.
So we've done quite a bit of work in the area, fleet services, public works, et cetera, and also fiscal sustainability and financial planning as well. So we'll kind of talk a little bit about some of the things that we found there. Public Works Department provides, a variety of different maintenance, capital improvement, engineering services. Our report was focused, and the scope of our project was focused really in the roads and bridges area, culvert maintenance, fleet services, engineering and administration. We did not go into the transit area. I mean, that was not part of the scope. It was really more focused on those areas that are really being impacted and were impacted by the significant loss of timber monies that you're very much aware of, over $1 million, close to $1.2 million, I believe, was at the peak of what Josephine County had received. And the key question that we were really trying to address is, what are the opportunities that exist to enhance the delivery of services for the Public Works Department in light of those financial resources that were available at the time?
Now, you're saying to adjust deliverables to the amount of money we get or not? Level of service and
that's
then figure out how to pay for it?
Yeah, that's a consideration. And as we go through this, we'll work through the different, aspects that we looked in that area. If you assume that there are no additional financial resources that are available, and we also need to understand the context of this. As we wrapped up our work, as HB 2017 was approved, which is going to provide you $24 million over the next 10 years, which is great. But the key is really...
If it's not challenged in courts in January or by referendum or whatever. So.
Yeah. That,
I don't think it's got 60% in both houses, so I think it's done.
But let me add my perspective, too. Public Works has had to endure a lot of declines along the way, and so this just simply kept us from dropping that extra $1.2 million.
Right.
But all it did was just stop the decline, so that now we have hopefully a level ground that we can be somewhat assured that we're going to maintain at least our current level of revenues.
Yeah. Index for inflation, it's going to be about exactly where we were at the peak of ONC.
Yeah, and in addition to that, the cost of services are going to increase as well. For no other reason, the latest measure that the PERS board took in terms of reducing the discount rate, which is going to have, what, about a 20 or 30% impact on your contribution rate?
If you're looking at percentages, our percentages went up about 3%.
Right.
So that wasn't as drastic as a lot of your school districts or some of your others,
right.
but our percentages were not quite as dramatic as some of the others. But they're talking about every 2 years that they're looking at,
right.
Another kick it up 3%, 4%. So I just wanted to make sure that we understood that, though, that Public Works has had quite a series of reductions,
right.
over the last several years. So they've taken into consideration the loss of revenue over time.
This might be off topic a little bit, but I need for clarification. You say they said, well, PERS is going to go up 3% or PERS is going to go up 10%. Who's they?
PERS.
PERS. And PERS, who is PERS?
The PERS board, the governor appoints a board to oversee the operation of PERS, and they go through the actuarial process.
At what point in time do the people say, I'm your employer, I'm not doing that anymore?
It's because it's that unfunded liability. So that PERS board, they have financial advisors that say, we think those forward-going projections are too rosy. It's not going to make 7.8% a year. It's going to make 7.5%. So all those assumptions based on 7.8% are now short. So they basically have to come back to the local agency and say, you got to backfill that reduced future forecast of earnings.
As you may be aware, there was a court case that was involved with some of the actions that they took, the state legislature took a few years ago to reduce the benefits of existing employees, which would have had a dramatic impact, financial impact, to help, kind of weather the storm that was going on with the recession and for long term. However, that was overturned by the courts. And so now the question is, okay, how do we handle things on a prospective basis, because the ultimate the ultimate issue with that is what is the current funding for the liability that has been incurred for existing employees to date, and if you can't touch what the amount of benefits are that are already provided, then you're really left to determining what you do on a long term basis to try to manage that.
And
they'll
do that.
I'm just trying to avoid the fact that there's people on PERS and there's people not on PERS, and the people that are not on PERS are fed up. But the people on PERS don't get that, I guess, until you're in the frozen food department, and some guy comes up and says, you're one of those kind of people, and lays you out. I guess you won't get the impression that you shouldn't do anything.
It's not that PERS employees don't get it; they have no control.
That's what I mean. They don't have sole control. They.
There's not an employee that has a control over not being a part of PERS. The only employees that have that option are the commissioners who opt in and out.
And as we're seeing in other states, when it comes to decisions made by organizations that have decided we just can't afford this any longer.
Mm-hmm.
If they decide to opt out, we're seeing this in California happening significantly right now, where agencies have said, it's just too much of a burden, we've got to opt out. Employees are having the benefits cut because those agencies have decided to pull out. They're not going to pay it's not a penalty, they're not going to pay the exit fee, which is fairly significant, and so the employees are being cut. So there's a significant amount of political issues that are going on. I'm in that state.
And that'll happen here.
That's a preview of what's going to happen in Oregon.
Yeah, that'll happen.
So anyway, as we talked, the scope of our review was really to assess efficiency and effectiveness of the Public Works Department. We looked at the organizational structure. We looked at management structure and some of the management services that are provided. Yes?
I don't mean to interrupt you. How long do you think the presentation will be?
I could do it within 10, 12 minutes.
Okay. No, I just want to be mindful of Peter, so letting you know that that's about we're probably looking at 20 minutes or so before we get to the next topic.
Okay.
So I just don't want to hold you up if...
I was going to text Chuck something.
So you want to aim at 9:30?
I can. I just come back then or something.
That's
fine.
Or stay for the show.
I mean, you're welcome to be a part of this. I just don't want to waste your time as one of our electeds. I want to honor your time and all that kind of stuff. And so,
well, I appreciate that. No, that's.
But we don't have Chuck here, so we couldn't get yours done anyhow. But I just wanted to.
When is he planning to come then?
I told him I'd text him. I had a sense of how long this was going to be, so I told him like 9:25, 9:30.
9:30. Okay, I'll just come back then.
Okay.
I'll do that.
Okay.
No, that's fine. No, thank you.
You bet. Thank you, Steve.
Yep. So, as you know, we looked at operations, we looked at admin, engineering, and fleet services were the four areas that we looked at. We conducted a variety of interviews. We interviewed the three of you, three commissioners, and various public works staff and other county departments as well to gain insights. We did some benchmarking of peer agencies that were selected, and we used our experience in looking at best practices and in light of the services that are provided here to determine, you know, what are some of the potential operation efficiencies that could come through it. I want to just touch on the peer agency research real briefly. We have a variety of criteria that we typically use to try to determine who those benchmark agencies are that can provide good comparative research data. And in this case, we determined along with staff that it made sense to look at basically four areas that would really drive the level of services that are provided. One is population that's served. The second is land area and square miles, understanding that some of those areas are, you know, forest and are not inhabited and don't have roads on them, etc. We looked at road miles as a potential, but came into some real complications in terms of that because there are some counties that have a significant number of road miles, or there are others that have a small number, but it still doesn't mean that they're not providing a higher level of service that is required of them. We looked at climate zone, though, because that was going to have an impact in terms of understanding what the vegetation and covert maintenance requirements would be, as well as the average annual rainfall, which has an impact not only on that vegetation issue, but also impacts bridges, roads, and the level of maintenance that's required to deal with weathering the storms.
Then when you do this comparison, I'm looking like a Jackson County. If you take out their incorporated out of Jackson County, they really don't have a whole bunch left for Jackson County. Whereas we have two incorporated areas, you know, these two, and then the rest is all county maintenance. And so there's the big loophole for me. Population doesn't really mean a that mean, and it's certainly a figure, but the commanding figure in my mind is what's left over after, you know, because you don't get involved in the city streets, you don't get involved with, you know, the highway division, you know, ODOT or anything like that. What is actually left in road miles of in under your jurisdiction?
Right.
That's the important part, I don't know whether we see that anymore.
And in our report, we actually asked them for what their number of road miles are that they're maintaining as well. So that is in the report. When we looked at it, it wasn't necessarily outside of the scope that would push us so far away. In fact, Jackson County reported 934 miles of roadway maintained. Josephine County has 565. And the average for all the peer agencies was 664. So. It's a higher number, actually. But
the other big push for getting Jackson there was climatologically, they're the closest to us, too. So they see similar levels of service degradation, vegetation growth,
that's
flooding,
right.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah. The one area that's not mentioned and shown on this table is we tried to, you know, start with concentric circles outside of Josephine County so that, you know, it was relatively, geographically similar, if you will. So we looked at a variety of different components in the report, and you've probably had a chance to take a look at those funding sources, organizational structure, the level and types of services that are provided, and what they've done with timber funds, and I'm going to touch base on that. One of the telling tales of data that's in the report is really what the amount of expenditures are that are spent for operating, for capital, and how much they have in contingency funding. That's what this graph shows on slide 8. Josephine County is over on the left-hand side. The rest of the counties are there. And you see, you know, Jackson County, that's, you know, $27.6 million is our operating budget. They also serve a county that has a total population of 212, understanding that some of that area is incorporated with Medford and the other cities that exist there. But what's really interesting, though, is when you take that and then break it down to some more level of comparative data, which is on a per capita basis, here's where you start seeing some trends. The average is about $200 per person that's spent on an annual basis for total public works expenditures. And when we say total public works expenditures, it's related to the same services that we're providing here and that we were under the scope of our review. But you see that, you know, Josephine County in total spends just shy of about $100, and along with Coos County and Yamhill, those are the three that are at the lowest tier of that. You know, you'll see Benton gets up a little bit higher at 172, and you see, of course, the four agencies, Curry, Douglas counties are just above that median or peer average threshold, as well as Mendocino and Del Norte in California. And then when you look at the number of expenditures per road mile, which is, again, is another way to try to normalize the data, tells you basically the same story. You know, ultimately, Josephine County is spending less either per capita or per mile than the peer agencies. And a lot of it is a result of just the, you know, is the funding that's available and what you can really do. But it does tell a tale in terms of, you know, are the expenditures out of line, not only with respect to peer agencies and helps understand that, but are they out of line internally in terms of just, you know, being able to serve the public to the extent that other agencies are able to do. Another area that we look at is full-time equivalent staffing for each of these agencies. And here's where you see that, you know, the average for these agencies is about 50, but Houston County is a little higher than that. Well, what could lead to that? And as we look through this, we, you know, identified that, you know, Rob and his staff are using staff to do a lot of the work that perhaps other agencies are outsourcing through our organizations. And remember, of course, that each of these agencies have a different marketplace, different demographics there, so the workforce is different, and so you have, you know, places like Curry County and Del Norte that need to outsource more of that because they don't have the availability of the workforce in the marketplace. We have a little bit more availability here, but it still ends up being a question, well, if our expenditures are less but our staffing is higher, what does that mean in terms of our staffing levels, et cetera? One other area that we looked at was how are agencies handling their these huge reductions? And again, remember that the context of this was before HB 2017 passed. And so you see that other agencies, you know, have done similar things that Josephine County has done. Again, by way of refreshing our memories here, JOCO ended up reducing staff by 22% and reduced the level of effort in terms of the miles of CO roads that are maintained by 64%. So there were some significant reductions there, as well as capital expenditures. Other counties did the same thing. Curry County had built up a $5 million contingency fund, so that helped them weather, is helping them weather the storm, but they even reported to us that that's helping us right now, but we're going to have to figure out what we're going to do.
That's going
to
run out.
Only going to go 2 years, maybe.
Right? Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, they're deficit spending like Douglas.
Exactly.
So is this essentially saying that everybody else is cut? I mean, look at Douglas County, 47% staff.
Yeah.
But it leaves them more to spend on roads because they're outsourcing it out.
No, because they used to get huge ONC payments. Right. They would get like $13 million a year to their public
works
fund.
They are the biggest ONC recipient.
Yeah, yeah, right. Their public works fund got as much as our general fund back in the day.
Wow.
They had like $88 million in the bank at one point.
Yeah.
But now they're
deficit spending big time. And I think they should ship like $3 million a year to the sheriff, something like that. And they have for quite a few years. Yeah, they had them in Klamath had just mind-boggling.
But then what did they do? They just closed all their libraries this last year, yeah, too, which we did back in 2008.
Exactly.
And instead of picking up garbage now, they're going to, you know, for free, they're going to be charged $23. Or,
yeah.
That's
right.
Yeah. That's probably, if there was a place that I would not want to be a county commissioner other than Josephine, then it'd be Douglas County, I think.
Right.
If I was Gary Lee, I'd take my cowboy hat off and not draw any attention to myself.
Yeah. You know, we asked this question of the other agency to see if there was any other, you know, ideas that maybe they implemented that, Josephine County could learn from, but bottom line is that you guys are doing a lot of similar types of reductions that were necessary to deal with that issue. And so we, the course of our review, we ended up making 63 recommendations. I'm not going to go through each one here today. I just want to touch on some of the highlights. But
there is 24 priority ones.
There are in the implementation action plan. There are several that are there. I want to touch on some of those higher priority items that we've identified there. But the bottom line here is that we've identified some process improvements and some efficiencies that could help in reducing operating costs. But really, again, short of any money that we end up getting from the state, is that to really address the loss of those funds, if there was no other funds available, there would be some significant reduction in service levels from an already existing reductions that occurred. There's no other way around that to get around 1.2 million to try to recover that. Again, I've just included in some of these slides some of the highlight areas. In both the bridge and culvert area, we recommended that a comprehensive asset management plan be created there. An asset management plan includes not only an assessment of each asset that's part of that, so assessing each bridge, which you're already doing in terms of its relative health, but also really taking a look at, and getting on a schedule in terms of repair and maintenance. Now, you're already doing repair and maintenance, but it's really becoming more formalized in terms of that repair and maintenance schedule. Then you take a look at that, and you then identify what the funding requirements are to not only maintain, but also do significant improvements and or replacement if that's going to be ever necessary. And again, this is not only in bridges, but also in the culvert area. It would also be applicable for roadway maintenance as well, but when it comes to roadway maintenance, there's a different approach that is taken with roadway maintenance, and that's the concept of a pavement management study, which has been about 10 years since Josephine County has done one. I know, Rob, you were talking about moving forward with a PMS. I don't know if that's...
You've actually got a proposal in hand.
Great. Okay. And one of the best practices that's used by agencies around the country in terms of quantifying the what your road service levels are is really the concept of pavement condition index, PCI. And agencies will establish, and there's actually some verbiage that goes along with each level of PCI, in terms of, is the road like smooth as glass? I'm, paraphrasing here a little. Or, is it, really chunky roads, are basically non-existent. Most agencies tend to try to target a PCI level of about 80. I know that in the past year, we've looked at a range of about 80, 85. And agencies, what they do is they set a PCI level in terms of not only their average PCI level for all the roads that they maintain, but they will also look at perhaps setting a minimum standard that they don't want to fall below X, whatever that is. Some agencies, it's 50. Some agencies, it's 40, which is really low, but it's a reflection of kind of what their availability of resources are. Other agencies don't want to get a road below 70. And again, to get to each level, and that's what a pavement management study does, is it looks at what the long-term capital improvement and operating funding requirements are to get to that level and a plan of attack to get there.
So how do we, in public works, how do we determine that, okay, we're going to go do this road or that road right there? Do we do it on a complaint driven?
No, we have an in-house system we've developed. We did the PCI about 2 years ago.
So we actually have a system.
We've developed a pretty robust. Yeah, it basically takes into account how wide is the road, what's the average daily traffic, when's the last time it was chip sealed, what's the known base, meter all these things in, and then also try to look at saying, hey, we're going to do all the roads in District 2 this year so we're not skipping all over the place. So we effectively used the PCI's jumping off point years ago and developed some in-house software to help us continue projecting that forward and which roads we're going to hit.
And so you're saying do another one, because that one's 10 years old, you need to do another assessment? Is that what you're saying?
It's time to restart, yeah. They've got professionals that'll come down and effectively walk every mile of road to kind of give us a bigger holistic look at all of those. And then it could be even a matter of saying different PCIs for each classification of road. We might say rural residentials, we're okay letting those get all the way down to 60.
Right.
Whereas Upper River Road, we don't want to get below 80 because we don't want to have to rebuild the dang thing. Okay. So that'll be some of the additional data we can glean out of that.
But how many complaints do we get? I think our road system is in pretty good shape.
It's in good shape, but we're kind of at that tipping point to where, you know, you can, the old adage is, you know, you can fix something for a buck today and it's $9 tomorrow if the road fails altogether when you're doing a dig out, redoing the base and all that stuff. So we've got roads that are kind of teetering on that edge. We're having to overlay more roads than I would like to right now because an overlay is more expensive, but once they get past a certain tipping point on a bigger road, a chip seal won't paper it over. So, yeah.
But I'd say too that roads are not an annual issue. You know, we've experienced reductions over the last 10 years, and it might take 10 years for a road to deteriorate to the point
where you start feeling that.
Yes.
Before you start feeling that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an exponential curve down. Had we not gotten the state transportation bill, you would have started to see a real big degradation in the next 3 to 5 years.
Well, and we've already reduced our chip ceiling by 64% in this report. So that's where at some point it'll become very, very evident that there are issues. So.
Well, and if I remember correctly from the report, we're also doing a different maintenance than just about anybody else, too.
We're not. We got that changed. So what happened was on the – where you could respond to what your road type was, there was a – it was either, you either had classified as chip seal, asphalt, or other, and the other counties classified their chip seal as a hard surface, which we didn't. So once we changed it, it's right back into that normalized
okay.
for everybody else.
Because I just remember seeing our number, and it was...
like by 70% different of one
correct.
Type.
Yeah.
It was a classification issue. So once we put it, I interpreted that question differently than the other. So once we flipped it back, we're right in line.
What's on Williams Highway right now, or Water Gap? What did you just do there?
Chip seal.
Okay.
Yeah. And the other benefit we have is like Jackson County has 500 miles of unpaved, something like that. So we have no anything other than chip seal and AC. So that's something we'd like to keep, but will that stay that way in the future? I don't know.
And that was one of the recommendations that we had in here, which is not really something that you want to lead as a great recommendation, but if push came to shove and financial resources were not available, you know, what are you going to do to be able to you know, create some sustainability within your public works funds? One of the areas would be to have to look at the roads that you have chip sealed right now and potentially revert them to gravel. And if that was the case...
Let it go, yeah.
Yeah, what, you know, there would need to be some type of prioritization in terms of what roads would be more beneficial, comparatively speaking, to revert to gravel than others. If you
how do you reverse that? I mean, you'd have to take that out of your county maintained inventory. Mm-hmm. And do you go to the residents and say, we're no longer going to take care of that for you? We're done?
No, I think our liability, our responsibility for maintenance isn't going away just because it goes to asphalt.
Right. It would stay a county road, we would have the ability to tell residents we're no longer maintaining this as a chip-sealed or AC'd road. And you can't just ignore it altogether.
You
let it go as long as it can, and eventually you get potholes bigger than a certain size or percentage of the road. Then you bring the grader out there, and you rip it up and you make it gravel.
You rip it up and just make it. You go from maintained to gravel being non-maintained, and then it's there.
Right.
Except,
it's still
there.
Ours.
It's never there. It's still
That's
ours.
The hard part, yeah. Like Jackson.
Unless you were to negotiate, again, and this wouldn't be applicable in every area we included in the report, though, is that you might be able to negotiate some type of privatization of that, of some of those roads. But not huge stretches, of course. I mean, you're talking more about, you know, areas where there might be a pocket of homes that are served and you know, is there a way to be able to privatize that? It's a difficult situation to try to do.
Well, that's what some of, was it Klamath? That's why they have $100 million in reserves, because everything's gravel. They don't actually maintain anything.
Yeah, and the reality is, like, Jackson County, they spend about half per mile on non-maintained, or on gravel as they do on hard surfaces. Their hard surfaces, they average like $28,000 a mile a year.
Yeah.
Non-gravel is still like 14. I mean, it takes a lot of time to grade that thing every year, bring in DG if you need it, grade it, water it, right, you know, all that stuff. It's still, you don't get to walk away.
I think it'd probably a bigger issue for us with our air mitigation stuff if everything went back to gravel, with the dust and everything.
Yeah, it's all outside the containment area, though, or almost all of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing that comes to mind is that story you had about the Groves boys, you know, come across that rollover crash.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many more road safety issues are we going to have because you got gravel and people are...
But you know, out there, and this is on the other side of Steens Mountain, those people travel that road. It's 50, 60 miles an hour down a gravel road over there because they grade it probably twice a year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it. It's just harder than Chinese arithmetic. And it, you know, you can go, you can go miles and miles and miles an hour out there. And that's just the way they, that's the way their way of life. It's when you get flatlanders and they get off the road and then they try to get back on the road, and that's what you don't do in gravel.
And our topography is not as conducive for that either.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. There's just,
the rain and wash off, I imagine, would be horrible.
Humongous. We would probably have more ditching. I know we would have more ditching effort if we were to let
schedule back. They have, and their roads are the tallest point, so everything just leaves the road. Where ours, we're coming off of this hillside, and the road becomes a ditch. And you really got a problem.
We would be buying a second back all probably,
way, way different. They don't do hillside roads. They just go out in the flats, and all the roads are in the flats. It's a whole different ballgame, but they do have a different system over there.
And for those roads that aren't considered ditches during those major storms, you have, of course, the culverts along the side of the road and whatnot. And one of the recommendations that we did have was that, you know, to get through those peak periods, you know, is to encourage staff to hire or, you know, get on contract some maintenance, you know, folks with private maintenance companies that can help address some of that backlog. When you look at the staffing levels, there's a couple of different, you know, areas you need to look at, especially in light of this new funding that's coming in, is are we going to staff ourselves up with permanent staff, not permanent, I use the quotation marks on it, but full-time staff that are employees of the county to maintain that throughout the year, or are there ways that you can use a combination of contracted work as well as then staffing to be able to do what you need to do? You know, you did have a significant reduction in staff during the recessionary period, and there might be a desire to move some of that back, and that's fine. But make sure you're looking at it with eyes wide open, because we also know that we have this PERS, you know, issue that's going on.
I don't want to get into the things that we need more staff. We hire 10 new employees or 12 new employees, and then we turn right around and have to fire them in 2 years because we PERS went up, and we don't have the resources.
Right.
We need a chain gang. We need a road gang. We
made some recommendations in the area of administration. The administrative staff is doing a great job in terms of their financial reporting and a whole bunch of different other aspects to provide the administrative support that are necessary. But when you come to tough times, when push comes to shove, are you going to put maintenance crews out on the streets to, you know, try to maintain levels as much as possible? Are you going to have administrative staff? And if that becomes an issue, you're going to have to look at doing some potential reductions in the administration area. But one of the areas that's got to be watched there, of course, is that to the extent that we're reliant upon grant funding and all the grant reporting requirements that are existing there, there's got to be a way to be able to maintain those requirements of the grant funding sources.
I think the grant writing and whatnot is going to be even more important going forward, because they have a lot of stuff on seismic and bridges and culverts and stuff that just came out through RV Act and stuff, and those are things we're going to have to apply for.
It's hard. It's the amount of reporting we do seems like overkill, 9 days out of 10, but that 10th day, assuming we get that FEMA grant for $120,000, we couldn't have got that without the ridiculous level of detail we keep.
When those come down,
right,
you already have to have all that preliminary stuff done, and when it comes down, it's the first guy through the gate, and if you've already got your matching funds and you've already got this, you're in. And if you're not, if you're starting in on that, well, we don't have a transportation plan, well, then you're not in the show.
Benton County Schools, literally, it was down to what type of tree, what was the value of the tree, what was the, I mean, it was that level of detail they needed inventory for their FEMA grant, and it is, I do have a question, though. I mean, it says for attrition, so do you have somebody that's close to retiring or something that attrition has even recommended here?
I don't know that we have someone that close, but we've also got a couple of internal changes we're looking at where they would pick up something on one of the other work groups and free that other work group up to be doing more work group specific activity.
Okay. So the other question I have is, one thing as a county we have to look at is we have individual grant writers in several departments. We have individual people that are doing that. At which point is it more advantageous for us to have a centrally located grant person countywide that is keeping on all of that versus having five in the county because each department has their own?
Yeah, the city grants pass. As a grant writer.
Yeah, political panhandler is what I call him, but you know, that's just my opinion of him, but maybe that's the way to go instead of each department. But
I think there's a mute button when we get in trouble.
Well,
no, it's fine. He knows how it is. Scott and I, we battle daily.
Okay.
So it's fine. But you know, some of this stuff's highly departmentalized. You know, writing a grant for public works is way different than writing a grant for public health, maybe.
And look at the airport grant.
Yeah.
We're just,
right.
Did you see the one coming tomorrow?
I read it. Did you read it? There's a mistake on page 52, by the way.
Thanks for catching that.
Yeah, they misspelled Jones.
Well, and a year or two ago, the board had talked about, not necessarily a grant writer specifically, but a grant finder, I guess, is for lack, you remember that, for lack of a better term, which may be a better fit or it's more holistic. Because, yeah, it would make no sense to have a county grant writer trying to write one of Chuck's grants to get bridge funding. But,
you wouldn't know the words.
But if there's somebody else that could look at a bigger picture to say, yeah, is there a Oregon Emergency Management grant out there that would help all the county departments get such and such?
Well, it's like me wanting to get AEDs in our county public buildings.
Right, yeah.
And they've changed the laws that it's now encouraged. I mean, we're literally launching a program today so people with heart attacks in public places will notify in people's phones so CPR-trained people can respond. And it tells you where the nearest AED is. Well, I was looking where our nearest AEDs are, and Grants Pass High School is locked up, and then we got Winco and Walmart. Why do the county buildings not have them? You know, that kind of, you do. It's on the map. But those kinds of things, I need a grant writer to find that there's a grant for that. And I was encouraged to go to Wolf Creek Fire to get their grant writer to find something for the county. So is that the best need for us based on what your recommendations are?
We're doing a case study with the city of Pasadena down in California, which frankly, surprisingly enough I guess, 90% of their roadway maintenance is handled through grants. And so they're doing something right down there, and we talked with them about that, and we're actually going to be writing up a case study for them in the next couple months. But, you know, they have centralized their grant writing requirements, which is dealing primarily in the public works area, but then it has now expanded to recreation, to parks. And it's starting to now pick up more because those other agencies are starting to get impacted now in terms of the cost of doing business and what is it going to, you know, be able to generate.
On the great big picture, though, nationally, I see that's the way you're going to correct that debt meter. Part of it is to say there aren't any more grants. We're going to cut this grant program, all grant programs down. Instead of having a big giveaway, you guys got to figure out how to do it on your own. And I see that's the place that it's going to stop one of these days. So
then you throw the layer of the federal politics that are going on in that area.
Yeah.
But you guys will continue to work with finance to see this other section of the audit and grant portion. There may be something that we're looking at there. Since we've already moved one out of a department into your office, it might be something we need to further look at. I am curious about fleet.
That's where I'm going to next, is that in the fleet services area, you know, there's some recommendations there. Some of the higher priority ones are to really establish more of the productivity goal metric of 70% of time of the mechanics on wrenching activities, and the variety of ways that we include in our report to be able to do that, bring parts that are closer to them, reduce the amount of time that they have to spend in doing some of the parts management, if you will. That said, there's already, you know, parts management that's going on. We think that there might be some great savings if you look at reducing the in-house parts management and really looking at more outsourcing, especially the recurring parts that are going there. And there might be some need to do some physical facility work, but the guy that we had that came out here felt that there were some opportunities to be able to do some of that. There are some transparency that needs to occur when it comes to what are departments paying for, and helping them really understand that, and having proactive meetings with them to talk about that with them about what the chargeback rate includes, being more transparent about what that calculation is, helping the departments to really understand the cost drivers in terms of chargeback. We do believe that a centralized chargeback system makes sense. And we also believe that there are economies of scale that the county overall receives by having maintenance done in a centralized fashion, like you're currently doing, rather than either piecemealing or piecemeal outsourcing different maintenance requirements. And a lot of that is driven by the fact, and the thing that's not listed on here but was mentioned in our report, is this concept of, does it make sense to outsource fleet? In the grand scheme of things, we don't believe that it makes sense. And one of the biggest drivers that you would have from outsourcing, aside from customer service issues, of which some of the recommendations in here we think will help address some of those issues, but it's with respect to the financial competitiveness. What are you paying outside agencies to be able to maintain your fleet? Even if you were to look at doing like a lease concept, of which you then would have to look at, you know, buy versus lease type decision. But what is the cost of outsourcing those maintenance activities versus doing it in-house? Staff's calculation of the labor shop rate is basically about $63 an hour. Our fully loaded cost, and we looked at a lot of data to come up with this, was just shy of about $100, $99. Well, what are you paying? Right now, you're paying Ford and GM over $100 an hour for their labor that they're providing. So you're competitive when it comes to that. And when you then look at having to do some more specific or high-end, heavy-duty type vehicles, you're having to pay potentially more as a labor rate that you pay on the outside. Currently, you're able to do that with your staffing and with your staffing levels at their existing rates as well as their existing productivity rates. If you increase the productivity rate and get those wrenching hours back up to where we feel that they should be, that would allow you to even be more competitive. And so from that perspective, we don't think that a complete outsourcing of fleet services makes sense at this point in time.
And when you talk leasing, though, don't they take care of it? You don't have to do anything to a lease investigation.
No, you just have to outfit it with your logos, lights, radios.
On the lease side of it, so we lease all of the two-wheel drive light stuff. We're not leasing anything big, but just pickup trucks and cars. So we lease all of that. We don't have to change the oil in it. We do?
No.
No, we don't have to change the oil in it. We don't have to fix it if it breaks down. We don't have to do anything. You call and say, hey, car number 13 quit, and we need another one here. So that all goes away. So doesn't that help with your mechanic performance productivity?
It could.
You won't have to even deal with that.
It could. But you need to do that lease versus buy decision, that if you're buying it, maintaining yourself versus what the leasing company like an Enterprise or other types of, you know, private enterprises that are doing more of the standard fleet, sedans, you know, those types of things. What is the total cost of what you're paying for, especially looking also at, you know, the amount of time that it takes for them to have the vehicle out and then getting it replaced, et cetera. So you have to do a study on that. And will it make sense? It could, but it would be really taking a deeper dive into those lease rates and really determining what's included in that.
I thought that's part of what we were asking you guys to do.
We did not do a complete analysis of lease versus buy. That was not necessarily within scope. When we do a more detailed fleet services analysis, what we'll do is we will actually take a look at that type of a thing and actually do the financial calculations to help determine, you know, that. And along that comes along with that is also the fleet utilization study, you know, and that was one of the recommendations that we had in here, is really taking a more deep dive in terms of, you know, some sedans may only get, you know, 2,500 to 3,000 miles a year. Others are, you know, workhorses. What is the utilization of each of those vehicles, and do you need to carry the total number of vehicles that you currently have?
On number one, established mechanic performance productivity goal 70%. When we did the city, the fleet was one of our audits at the city. They were getting the job done, but there wasn't any documentation to say they were. And is that where we're at here? Are we just not doing the paperwork? Because your performance productivity is directly tied to how much you write down. You know, they were getting paid full, and they were getting the job done. We weren't arguing with that. The trucks were coming in, the oil was getting changed and going out, but you look on the thing and say, where's the work order for that, and how much do we charge Public Works for doing that because we're the city shop? No work order. And their hours weren't, you know, they were getting paid 40 hours at the end of the deal, but they only had logged in like 22 hours on paper. Is that where do we have that kind of?
No, we've actually been going the other way. We feel like our guys are probably getting a little too much detail. Okay. Two fleet managers back, he went over the top with maintenance codes, work orders, and all that stuff. It was kind of like, you know, work not just worked on a light. It was the right front light, you know. So we've tried to neck that back down a bit, but no, our work orders are pretty dang robust and detailed.
But question on that, I mean, one of the concerns I have is we have a department that has gone to buying their own vehicles through other means, which also makes me question who's doing maintenance on them. Are they, because they're not purchasing through you guys and that process, but the question was, they're paying $37,000 on a car for maintenance, and that's a new car. So why is the maintenance cost so much that they can buy a new car? And so those kind of questions come into play of the transparency of where is the cost, where is it going, why is it so much?
We can very clearly give work order history on any car we've got. I can show you the repair orders we've done for any car for the last 12 years. As to the department that's bought their own vehicles, they actually have requested to work on a couple of those themselves. I've got a whole lot of concerns with that. I know JJ does from a risk standpoint. I'm guessing Arthur does. Yeah. I'm going to actually have a discussion with that elected official today, but I will probably need some board weighing in so that doesn't get away from us, because we've gone the shade tree mechanic route in the past, and it's a nightmare.
Well, and those vehicles
made that are never kept.
Those are vehicles that we can't take the risk.
They are county vehicles.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. And so, yeah, we get them back 3 years from now, where there's been work done. You know, hey, put a hole in the coal in the column here. Whoops, there's a wire there that nobody noted. Yeah, it's a slippery slope to head down.
Well, we can give you examples on search and rescue where they play both sides of the...
They maintain it until it blows up.
And until then it blows up, and then it's a county vehicle, yeah. And we have to get new ones, because look at the shape of this vehicle. And then it's like, well, I thought you were maintaining the vehicle. Just last week you were saying you don't need fleet because you're maintaining. So there's a way
that's
to play both
paper,
sides.
That's just a paper trail, because yeah. When it does need to be replaced, you can recommend that it needs to be replaced, because you know what, this, we've been working on this thing forever, and you know, it's our recommendation to replace it. You know, that's where that works out okay, but also, but you know, there's a lot of, with everything, my brother-in-law can fix that for less than what you charge to fix it.
Absolutely.
I go through that in the...
Until he can't, yeah.
In the car culture, mm-hmm. A lot.
Until they can't, yeah.
Or if you're...
Oh, my brother-in-law is going to do that for me, so okay, good luck with that.
You're a little tight in
budget. A year later, they come back and say, would you work on this? And not a chance.
Or if you're tight in budget, where do you skimp? It's on your deferred maintenance.
I thought that the recommendation was to utilize outdoor for certain travel. I think it was a mileage thing or something like that. There was this fear of in-town stuff versus how far away the trip, or kind of like a, I don't know. Mm-hmm. There was a level of outsourcing versus having departments have vehicles.
What we did is we indicated in there what some of the thought process would be in terms of if you were to outsource different components of maintenance. And so that is included in the report, yes, the subletting concept, you know, of understanding certain pieces of that.
And I guess without getting too far off topic, I'm going to have a action plan in terms of how we're going to attack these, but a couple of quick things we're going to do is, number one, I'm going to come to the board to say we need to reinstitute minimum miles, which we used to have. So you're getting billed for 500 miles a month whether or not you drive it, and departments are going to scream, but too bad. If there's cars driving 1,200 miles a year, that's not acceptable. So that's one thing I think is going to really change the math in terms of how many cars we have. And also, I want to have some kind of a fleet advisory committee that meets quarterly, so we can address these things, because a lot of what we see here is just a lack of awareness, honestly. I mean, I send a memo out every year exactly detailing what the costs are, how you get to that for each car you own, and it's got to be department-driven at some level. If the assessor comes to me and says, I need a new car, who am I to say, no, you don't? If they want the car and they want to pay for it and they think they can, that's between them and eventually you guys in the budget committee. But there clearly needs to be more dialogue with those departments that are somehow forgetting what they see prior to budget season.
So one of the things that I am interested in having all of our fleet vehicles have is the tracking, the mileage, the usage tracking that can come with, I don't know, Verizon gave us a presentation.
You talking for like GPS type thing or for how many miles a month?
Both.
Oh.
I mean, it's how many miles, it's how well you're driving that car. Are you driving it recklessly? Are you being responsible? You know, all that kind of stuff. I know our parks have it on all their vehicles, but right now it's department versus all of our fleet doing something like that. Mm-hmm. But it would also show us, are our vehicles being utilized to the level? Because you can see exactly how much mileage is being used. And if something's getting stolen, we know exactly where it is.
For the theft aspect, the utilization is a bit tougher only because a lot of the work that departments do involves a lot of idling time or slow. You know, you want to go look at some of our pickup trucks are going to show 8 miles a gallon because they're piloting or idling in between. So we'd have to figure out a way to actually tease out some of that bad data, but it's certainly a doable thing. I know it's a lot cheaper than it used to be. I don't know what it is, $6 or $8 a month probably.
Like in the hours
from the private sector, it cleaned up a lot of hanky-panky that goes on that you don't know about. Mm-hmm. You know, my employees, they're straightforward and everything. They say, well, I saw your van parked out at Lake Selmac. Mm-hmm. For all afternoon, and you go, why was it out there?
Right.
And I had another company, a friend of mine, and he decided, okay, I'm gonna GPS on my truck. And the fishing trips to Lake Selmac stopped.
Right.
Immediately. What are you doing at Lake Selmac?
Well, the other side
of
it.
5 hours, he's fishing. That's what he's doing.
That if you have a work order and this is the places you have to go, and it'll show you what's your best gas utilization and which route you go.
You can set up tracking routes, sure, depending.
I mean, the ability of it, yeah. I mean, based on the presentation I saw at least.
Yeah.
I don't know that they're the right company or the right feasibility.
Sure.
But I do like the idea that something like that is an accountability measure for all county staff.
Yeah. I would suggest, yeah, that's a board, department head, EO discussion. I don't want to be the guy telling departments how they need to monitor and discipline their employees.
I think that would be a subject for your fleet advisory board. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
On a quarterly basis, you know, this is what we want to look at now. That would be a recommendation for them. And that's who would hear the presentation from Verizon or AT&T or anybody else that's in there.
And I believe there are
your trailers that get stolen, our chippers, all that other kind of stuff. I mean, tracking all stuff.
Mm-hmm. We've got a whole host of, you know, utilization standards that other agencies have established that we can provide you as a starting point.
Sure.
Policies, et cetera. So, yeah. Real quickly, I know get through here. In the engineering side, there's some customer service areas that we think that could be really improved, especially in light of some of the development activity that's going on within the county with some residential, you know, properties that are going to be developed, et cetera. And you know, we think that there's the ability to establish more collaborative relationship with the planning department to make sure really and just focus on the customer. What is the customer's perspective in terms of being able to get their property developed and have the encroachment permits and all the other permits that they need from Public Works incorporated in their project. And we also think that this concept of a customer having to go from the courthouse here over to the Public Works Department and come back is not really the most customer service friendly. I get that there's facility issues in terms of just, you know, spacing, but there's got to be something that hopefully can be done here to be able to co-locate, even on a part-time basis, some engineering staff here along with planning staff to be able to provide a more seamless experience for the customer.
Somebody should be from both of those departments in the same. When you come in to get a set of plans or whatever, they should be able to speak to the whole thing at once. And if it means having somebody from Public Works in the planning, if we move that, say in the wildest imagination, city moves out next door and we decide to put them right over next door, it should be one-stop shopping as much as possible rather than back and forth. Because this across the town, across bridge, back and forth and back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And that is not going
to
fly.
Yeah, maybe establish, like hours, 8 to noon or something like that.
Yeah.
To start, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Yep.
That's when people are going to be there. Or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday,
yeah,
whatever.
From 1 o'clock on, you're not, Public Works doesn't need to be in the room. Perfect.
Right.
But handles 60-70% of the traffic that you do in the morning, I'm going to get.
How many engineers do we have?
We've got 6 on staff, but it would primarily be Eric Hesacker because he's our planning liaison, so we would be looking at using him as that go-between, as he already is now.
The final aspect I want to share, and I really think this is critical for you to consider, is this concept of the fiscal stabilization plan. And I would also recommend that maybe you consider not just in the area of Public Works, but countywide. It's a best practice to do some long-range fiscal planning, to look at, doing 5-year projections. And I know that in some regards you may be doing some of that, and especially in the CIP area, you're doing, 5-year kind of a capital improvement plan. But more and more we see agencies are better to really understand and develop their overall strategic plans in a fiscal area to understand what that sustainability is going to look like. It also becomes exacerbated when you have issues like the PERS rates are going to be changing, that's something that's partially outside of your control. And so we really recommend that you do a fiscal stabilization plan. One would think that perhaps because of the state funding bill that perhaps it softens the need for it. I would argue that it actually enhances the need for a fiscal stabilization plan, because you really need to understand what that long-range financial model is going to look like when that money drops off in 10 years, because there's no guarantee that it's going to be able to continue after that point. And so making sure that you're making wise policy choices so that you're making informed policy choices in terms of the long-range view of your public works department, and then perhaps countywide as a whole. You know, we're seeing a lot of agencies. Right now we actually have 10 projects going on in the fiscal stabilization area with other agencies, cities and counties, to help them, guide them through that process. And it's such a critical component of them understanding what their fiscal health is going to look like in the long term. And as they're developing their overall or overarching strategic plan and their vision for the agency and the community. So, final comments, the transportation funding bill is going to be helpful, but it's only going to be helpful in being able to restore what you lost during that Great Recession. You still lost the timber monies, and then what's going to happen after that point is something you really need to start taking a look at. We did provide a draft implementation action plan that staff is going to start working on. I think Rob just mentioned that he's going to be looking through that, looking at the priority levels, assigning tasks, and then really the way that we developed it is you switch out priority with deadlines, and all of a sudden now you've got a roadmap for implementation and a timeline for doing that. So. Anyways, if there's any other questions, but we've appreciated the opportunity to work alongside you in this project. And
in your nose and around other jurisdictions, you find differences. For instance, part of the look forward in 10 years is to say, okay, if we don't get those transportation dollars in 10 years, what are we going to do about that? I mean, can we put in a 3 cent a gallon local county gasoline tax to fund public work? Mm-hmm. What are some of the options there? What are some of the other people doing that have less than we have? There aren't very many that have less than we have.
Yeah.
But what would they do? Yeah. I mean, what are some of the options there?
There are.
And the grants, I get all the grants right. Stuff and all that stuff.
Okay, this is not necessarily just in Oregon, but also in the Western United States. What have we seen agencies do? Gas tax measures, clearly, because there it's a matching of potentially of the roadway degradation that's happening as a result of the purchase of gas. But you have an issue there, of course, with more and more electric vehicles that are being used. There's some roadway, impacts
that
are
fix that. Being affected. That's going to get fixed on its own through the state. The state's got a couple of good ideas on that. I'd say do it at registration. You get 50 miles per gallon, you pay $500 in registration every 2 years instead of 80.
Right. So there's looking at your development impact fees and really taking a look and assessing traffic mitigation monies that are as a result of impacts. And I know that in this community here, especially where the bigger development's going to be, it might be in the incorporated area of Grants Pass, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there isn't an impact on county roadways as a result of that work. Mm-hmm. And so
you're paying where you stay. So I think there's some, when people say, "Well, I'll never go for that," they say, "It's doing. It's local. It's not going to the state and then coming back, trickle back after they take their cut.
Yep.
It's dollar for dollar right here. You pay 3 cents a gallon in Josephine County, plus the people that come in Josephine County, they pay 3 cents a gallon because they're using the road. It's a user fee, and you get it at the pump." Or you get it at the registration site.
Yep.
Now, if you do that, my Corvette, they pay me $86 every 2 years.
Right.
Because of the mileage it gets.
We've seen agencies increase their transient occupancy tax, that a portion of that goes to roadway improvements. So that's been helpful for them. Another couple of areas is improvement districts, creating improvement districts where it would make sense, where you look at more of the privatization of some of those roads through that improvement district piece, and maybe the county chips in a little bit, whether it's getting started or whether on an ongoing basis, but it places a little bit more of the direct burden on those that are developing and owning that property.
When a new plat comes in or a new development comes in, is there a way to split that like 60-40 and just say going forward, if we have to do anything on this, it's 60-40, the homeowners association pays 40% and the county pays 60%?
Through a development agreement, mm-hmm. you can do that. Sure. Through setting up an improvement district, you could do something like that.
Right, right.
Because
right now, the for instance, if we have to put a road in or we maintain a road in a plat, guess what? That just got amortized over the whole county.
Right.
And I'm never going to do that unless I know anybody in that development. But if you said, okay, it's 60%, 60-40, 40% of it. We come in here and we have to redo all these streets in here. And then, your homeowners association needs to keep in mind, we're going to assess you 40% of that. Yeah. I didn't know if that could happen. That
I don't think I've ever heard of a prorating. It's an interesting concept.
Some of the burden.
You heard of that being prorated?
Would then prorate it?
Yeah. I've always kind of heard all or nothing. Yeah.
On new stuff, because I'm not going to go out there, and visit the folks in that subdivision. But yeah, and they, but why should I pay for that?
Yeah.
Or all of it.
It's got differences in through roads versus dead end roads, and those type of situations. Where
if it's in the county's inventory, a maintained inventory, can you split some of that off and say, the homeowner association or that plat is going to have to pay 40% of that at any time?
Can you amortize it over probably part of your tax bill?
Just
so you'd be forcing a subdivision then to create an HOA, because a lot of times they don't even have them.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have to be an HOA.
No,
you could say that within this, it'll be added to your tax bill, to your annual property tax for your road.
So one of the things that I've been talking with, just brought up briefly, coming up over the next few months, a vision for the county. The other part of it, Arthur and I were talking yesterday about, we don't have a master plan as a county in any of the departments. So the recommendation for transportation and kind of a plan for financing for this department is wise, but it is something that I'm looking to having us.
Right.
You said, where are we going? Are we just in survival mode that each year we face it, versus what's our 5-year plan? What do we need to be looking at in 10 years to 20 years? Where I don't want it to go is that we had this situation with Terry Lane, which was it a county road in the city, because it was unmaintained, single lane, ditches on each side, but it wasn't part of the master plan, so there was no traffic study deemed to see what should the impact of Winco going in next to a single lane road that already people are stopping to let traffic in and out.
We couldn't require them to do anything about it
because it wasn't a master plan. It's like, okay, if we're doing a master plan and looking at these things, we have to have the flexibility that as things change, you can incorporate things into it without it being, oh no, that's not part of our plan. But at the same time, we still need to have an idea of where we're going so we can try to reach those goals. And so I appreciate that that's the recommendation in here as well, because it's something we're already talking about countywide.
Wasn't it Gold Hill that wanted to do something through the MPO, but they didn't have a master transportation plan, so they couldn't? They need not apply.
Yeah, them or Rogue River, I don't remember which. Yeah.
Rogue River, they had a, and it was, right down the line of what the MPO would point at. They go, it's not in your plan. Sorry.
Yeah.
You show us where it's in your plan and you swap this out, but they didn't, so they were ineligible.
Right.
Ineligible or whatever it's called.
Right.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Steve, for your time. Appreciate it. And
we
will be putting some things to practice and looking forward, Rob, to your action steps that you're going to be bringing to us.
Good timing.
In your contract, is there any follow-up? Do you come back in a year and say, how are you guys doing?
I want to do that. I will be doing that. I'm hoping to see you at the various COA conferences, and we can chat about things. But, I would, and we're always available to.
Well, it's a good time between the state funding bill and us starting up on the TSP getting updated. It's good timing.
We've got a lot of changes that we're going to be making. Some as a result of this study, some just because we've had it in the works and no funding. So, I just would like to have another snapshot in a year and say, these are the things that we've done. And, and you kind of come back to, it didn't really work, or there was no return on investment on that one or whatever. So just kind of a little bit of follow-up if that could happen. I think
that'd be helpful.
Sure.
We can talk about
all
the
next one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you. Sorry we took up so much of your time.
No. Bow down.
Next on our agenda is order number 2017-038, in the matter of adoption of Josephine County Public Works Design Construction Improvement Standards and Specifications and Road Standards. We have our county engineer, Chuck Desjardins, and our surveyor, Peter Allen. And I believe Director Brandis will be coming back to join us in a moment. So we talked about this a couple weeks. There were some questions and things left, and I don't remember where we left it. And I do have, one of the sections that I know is particularly that you said that you put out to surveyors and folks to weigh back in is the monumentation post and box section, kind of a new section. I, And so for me, I guess where my question would come from is, why is this being added? It appears to be something greater than what state law requires, and so just wondering for the need and the why.
Well, the monument boxes, that's probably the simplest discussion. When we go in and maintain a road, right now the state law requires pins to be set out in the road, survey pins. If we hit...
In all cases or just some cases?
Well, on a new road, when you're creating a new road as part of a subdivision, for instance, there the state law requires that you set center monuments on center lines, so points of curve, tangent, as well as on the right-of-way.
And it's on center line, and then you measure each way from that for the right-of-way?
Right, yeah, the right-of-way.
Okay, so
and it can be varying widths, but it does. The bottom line is it does require monuments to be set. As part of the monumentations, we set the lot corners, we set points on the right-of-way, the angle points there. And then we also set points of curvature, points of tangency there in the center line on the road itself too.
Okay.
So.
And when we do go in and maintain the road, I mean, granted, it will be 15, 20 years probably down the road. If we hit one of those monuments, we have to actually file a survey to reestablish that.
So you didn't move it or something.
Right. Where if it's in a box, it's protected more. So. That was the reason it was put in. It's to cut down on future
because
liability for the county.
You guys are hitting things in the middle of the road, and it's caused damage, and you have to pay to have it redone.
We have, yeah.
I had a situation when I lived up on Beverly Drive where there was a manhole that was underneath an oil-matted street. They just oil-matted this part. Just nobody ever made them do anything to the street. Coleman went up there and hooked that with their ripper.
Mm-hmm.
And what it did, it dumped all the pea gravel in the sewer, plugged it up. So I go, and that plugged up my house. And so when I said, well, I need help with this thing. You know, it's pretty expensive. And Coleman says, not ours. I said, but you're the one that hit it. Said, here's the plan. It didn't show anywhere on our plan. There was nowhere on the plan. So I think, you know, you could do the same thing with a pin. With the monument.
Well, it does. I mean, it's part of the requirement is that, I mean, if you're going to go out and do a road construction project, whether it's, you know, reconstructing a road, resurfacing there, I mean, it's the responsibility, the state law says, the responsibility of that individual to hire a surveyor or, you know, have one in-house there to go out and do investigation to look for any monuments that are currently existing out there. So that is a current condition.
So it doesn't change the requirement that you would have to do that process. You're saying it just by putting a box, you're trying to protect it, but it's adding a level of work for other folks that is an increased cost.
It is an increased cost, and we understand that. Peter and I have actually been talking about it. One thing that I had tossed out to Peter was just maybe putting the boxes on center line, where the roads intersect, just as a starting point, see how it goes, and it would lessen the impact of the surveyors, and it would provide us some protection.
In a quarter mile of road, how many of these boxes would you have?
Well, just for instance, one subdivision that we just recently completed, private side of things there, out off of Elk Lane, I think there was 14 to 16 monuments in center line out there, and that was in maybe a half a mile of road or so, I would guess. Something of that sort.
$100 a piece?
Oh, no. I called up Robco, and they said it could be $500 piece or more. And that's not including the surveyor's cost to, you know, to work with them and coordinate that.
Wow.
It's a huge expense.
But
it doesn't take away the state requirement that you'd still have to hire the surveyor to locate them before you're doing your repavement or your repairs.
Right. And it's really more the emergencies where, you know, you're sitting there underwater and, I mean, you're out there digging, you know, underwater. And like the Redwood area is a prime example. You know, during a big rain event, that whole area is underwater. And if we're trying to dig up a culvert or dig something up, I mean, we can easily hit them.
So how does this change that?
But in an emergency, you really wouldn't probably care anyway.
Yeah. No.
Say an emergency, you just go ahead and do
this
it.
This isn't going to fix an emergency.
We surveyed a pin on a later date.
Well, that's if we even knew there was a pin there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, this was an item that was added late, so really Peter and I didn't have, but when the board directed me to get the standards in, so we really haven't had a chance to work this one out.
And this would be kind of like a water valve type casing, I assume.
Yeah, it would look like a water valve.
Either that or, yeah, we've got the cast aluminum ones that we're using in the surveyor's office, right, too. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's acceptable styles of cases out there.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But when we're, you know, looking at a $15,000 plus increase to a development cost, mm-hmm. and we already are getting huge backlash from our developers that currently, between our fees and the cost of everything, it's not worth developing. And yet, we're not keeping up with our housing needs. We're not looking for more regulation to increase costs. We are looking for ways to reduce barriers to safely still be able to build and actually mm-hmm. have development happen. So I don't see this as an improved development necessarily if it's going to impede people from being able to afford to develop. And $15,000 in and of itself isn't, but that adds up with each little thing.
Oh, yeah.
That is a big deal. $15,000 is a big enough thing that it's either a profit or a not. And if it's a not, they're not going to develop.
It's all your kitchen appliances.
Yeah, and that's where we're
kitchen
at right
appliances,
now.
Kitchen appliances, monuments. You know, it's just the way a contractor looks
at
it. Another question I had along that line, not just tell me to shut up when you want to, Chairman. If I were to be developing a lot like they have, I'm going to split a lot, and I'm doing 80, what's the trigger? Do I have to go back out into the existing road and put these monument boxes out there?
No,
or is it just on new roads?
New roads. Yeah. And again, it's only the publicly maintained roads, so restricted residential road would not fall into that category because Public Works is not involved in the maintenance of those.
So what roads would this actually affect? Because
county maintained roads.
But he said new roads.
New county maintained roads somebody's building for a development. Basically, it would be somebody building a road that accesses more than 5 lots.
And county maintained road, yet we've been saying that we're not accepting any new roads into our inventory.
No, we are. We always do. There would be the debate to say, are we issuing a moratorium where we would not?
Okay, that's a good question.
If a road is built the county standards,
say we're not accepting anything more into our inventory.
He's talked about exploring that, but he has not put that out there formally.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Sure talks like it's done already, doesn't it?
It would be a massive discussion. I would not take that one lightly. You know, obviously, there's going to be a lot of pushback from the developers and everything else. But
well,
yeah, if you're asking me if I'm in favor,
I would tie in with your previous discussion that you had about the 60-40.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what the monumenting is at some level, too. It's, you know, yes, it's more expensive to do it that way. But the flip side being, if we don't do it, we're socializing, publicly dispersing those costs of the eventual oops. What's enough to do it? I don't know. Is there a way we could do like an offset on these instead? Condition an offset? Would it be cheaper to put another pin?
Well, that's really what your right-of-way monuments are. I mean, they're out there on the edge outside there, but you know, the law says we got to set them on center line. And actually, the ones that end up on center line are usually the ones that end up staying there the longest because as development occurs, utilities go in, people do improvements to their land. They can tear out other monuments too. So,
well, just, yeah, the center line's a little more protected than the outsides are. I mean, I just saw a Vista tear up my road, and it wasn't, you know, I don't even know if they made it to the center line, kind of thing. So, I guess, you know, for me, I just want to be mindful of. I'm hearing a lot of backlash from developers that it is getting to the point that they're almost done. And were you there the day the Windermere at Rotary, where the Windermere economist came in and talked about what Josephine County's housing needs are versus what we're building? He said, in order to keep up with our housing demands, what we need right now, we would need to be building 1,100 houses this year and keeping that inventory going. And we have 400 permits.
Right.
So we're not anywhere near what we actually need to hit. And one of the developers is telling me they often have built multi-family dwellings for the sake of, hey, you build more, you get more income. They're actually getting out of the business. They can't even, it's so not profitable right now. And it everything isn't about profits, but it is if we're going to develop and keep going forward. And, you know, where we have different places, what?
They need to lower the standards right now. There is no shelter classification in planning. This is not a discussion for here, but it is for planning. To where I'm cold, I want to be warm. I'm wet, I want to be dry. I don't need a 95% efficient gas furnace in order, or you're not building. I don't need to put in a 21 SEER heat pump, or you're not building. You're going to put in R38 in the ceiling, or you're not building. You're going to do all these things to keep you from building a house that's basic shelter. There needs to be a category for shelter. Then you could be up with the 1,100.
And all I'm saying is this is adding one other layer to that.
It is adding one other layer.
Because it'll be $15,000 or however much more.
Question is, how often do we knock one of these monuments over and have to have a resurvey in the last 5 years?
Well,
have we done 300?
They weren't required prior to about five.
As far as centerline monuments?
Yeah.
It's been in there for
could
a long time. I mean, 15 years, 20 years maybe.
How many have we done? I mean, is it an issue that you're doing 10 a month or on an average if you do a, you know, what is it?
I don't know. I mean, as far as actual subdivision, maybe you have one a year. Maybe as far as one subdivision, if that's what you're asking there.
And what's the cost that we're knocking them over and have to repair them versus
that's what I'm saying.
That's the cost.
They're getting knocked over in a normal piece of maintenance a year.
And if they're 15 years or newer, we probably haven't been in to maintain those roads yet.
Could we establish something kind of like the corner pres fee that's the oops, somebody knocked it out fee that's just out there available to potentially draw on to get stuff reset?
And how would that work? I mean, as far as... I mean,
every one of these new ones, there's a surcharge of maybe $20 on each one that's kind of sits there and accrues, and when it's every now and then, our crew oopses it or Copeland oopses it, and you have to go
so
reestablish
it. So an additional fee that you pay that the developer would pay
to
monument?
To reset the occasional pin, yeah. I mean, how many pins do you think you end up resetting a year because road construction knocks
them
out?
I mean, Chuck would have to answer that. I mean, because as county surveyor, we don't do that.
Right.
Unless we're asked to be a part of it there.
Well, and it almost sounds like this is not as big an issue as we are trying to prevent a future issue, but it might not be that big an issue.
Right. Because, yeah, I can
see. Rather than $500 a hole, you're saying just, okay, you've got 10 pins on there.
Maybe it's 25 a whack or something. Yeah, pick a number.
25 a whack.
I don't know.
It's 250, and you've got 10 pins in there. You pay $250, you throw it into a fund. And then if we have to go out there and pay you to reestablish a pin,
Public Works, it would typically be their project.
Okay.
I mean, if a private individual or private contractor goes out and does work, then that is their responsibility by state law. It doesn't always happen, and it's awful and extremely hard to enforce. You know, then they are responsible to replace that monument if they damage one.
We could work with Pete and Richard to come up with an average cost of a reset and come up with a WAG. Here's how many a year, and here's how many developments we think. I don't know.
Again, we're adding something for a convenience to, but it's like, what's the cost of it? I mean, we have to have a balance, not to add a regulation, just to add a regulation.
And honestly, I mean, I haven't had, that was a recent ad, so I really haven't had a great time.
Right. Yeah, breaking
yet.
We've been on vacation.
I would be fine with pulling that out this round to get this round adopted.
And refining that.
And then refining it and then coming back to the board at some future date with here's where the county surveyor and the county engineer.
I'd like to talk to some other jurisdictions as well and see how they handle it.
And
a lot of it is, do we set these before the road is paved? Do we set it after it's paved? I've done those. You know, the city of Ashland requires monument cases on every monument in the center line over there. I know back when I first moved to Oregon and started surveying, I mean, I think we got two done in a day. You have to go out there, you take a chop saw, you cut out brand new asphalt, and you know, then you have to try and refinish it and get everything back in and match it nicely there, and too. So it's quite a laborious task. And if you hire somebody to do it, to come out there and try and core it, then you know, you've got some extreme costs, for the mechanization of that. So.
I'm willing to pull that out and then give us further thought and then bring it back if we need to, or a different concept.
Or another concept, explore what Rob's suggesting there as a possibility.
What I would like to do is to leave the standard in there but not say when it's implied, just so that if we do adopt something, everyone would already have the drawing in place. So it would be in the standard, but it doesn't say this is when it's required. But if you're installing a box in the center line of the road, this is the standard you use. Yeah. If, and then use the if, because we still do add center line monumentation for government corners when we find those out there.
I don't know.
I just want there to be an alternative to putting in that monument box.
Well, it wouldn't be required for new subdivisions. Okay. It would only be required for, it wouldn't be required for anything. It would just be as a placeholder so that, you know, one, if Peter sits there and somebody wants to put a box in, he goes, well, the road standards has a drawing.
Public Works would have a standard in place that would need to be installed according to that standard.
If they
I think that's what he's saying. So it leaves it, it's not mandating it to be
not
done.
Not mandating it to be a
at this time,
if we're going to put a box
if we're going to put a box in,
you don't get to use 4-inch PVC.
Standardize the box,
right?
Yeah, or at least the installation of it, which Chuck and I have talked about that too. So I don't know if we want to modify that as well, but you know, or make some other options available there. But I think that's all Chuck is just offering there, is that leave it in there as an optional standard. These are the criteria that if you want to put one in, this is how it shall be done. But not mandating that it be done as part of a subdivision or where you have a road that's publicly maintained.
And then come back to the board in the future and say, you know, here's what Peter and I came up with and whether we...
Okay. You okay with that?
Yeah, I am. Do
you understand what he's proposing there or what we're suggesting there?
I want your buy-in before we go forward with anything.
Yeah, I'm okay with establishing a standard. I think that... maybe make some modifications, because we talked about that, you know, to try and get in a 2-foot section of PVC pipe in an existing road can be quite a laborious task in itself right there when you're dealing with already you've got compacted base rock plus maybe a layer of shale and you've got fabric down there, and then let alone now you're going in there and undermining, mm-hmm. you know, an established road base. So those are some things that we just talked about there. We don't want to do that. We don't want to damage the existing road and cause more problems mm-hmm. in the future. Just to meet the standard, so we want to look at that.
And again, wouldn't be a mandatory. Whatever we come up with, it's not going to be mandatory. It'd just be if somebody wants to put a box in for whatever reason.
My concern with this is this says the surveyor of record shall say.
The language
and so that's
would
not
change.
That's
it would have
not,
to be. It would have to be changed.
Yeah, then. But yeah. I mean that shall word doesn't give right. them an option. That's a mandatory. Right. So I just.
You
work
would
on
have,
something
the
and
language
bring
would have to be revised
yeah.
there as well.
And I can draft up that revised language, send it to Peter, get a buy-in.
And I think that would also go with the Carsonite posts, because I'm my stance on that is I would prefer not to have that as a shall do as well.
Okay.
Well.
The monument cases, you know, like we talked about, well, maybe we look at doing those, you know, going back to our earlier discussion, maybe we end up at centerline intersections or at the end of a cul-de-sac or something like that. But at this time, but I think going, let's go back, let's revisit this and look at some other options here and spend a little more time with this before we make it define how we shall do this in the future here.
Yeah.
I have no problem describing if you're going to do it, this is what we're
describe a standard in place. Look, I mean, they have,
that. I just,
you'll have all kinds of standards for how things are done, obviously, there. So.
Well, let's get creative on moving forward. You know, I like your idea of say with the $25, find out what that takes, and over advertise over the long haul and go from there. If you do knock one of these out, you know, you're covered. You basically bought insurance for it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it would have to cover the cost of go out there, reestablish where the point mm-hmm. go where that monument goes. So you have to go out and you have to survey to other monuments around it there, and then you just. And then reset the monument and file a plat. So you have filing fees.
But you don't have a plat rate for that. I mean, that changes.
Exactly. That changes, it's just like a survey on anybody's property. There's no one set price for that. It all depends.
2 days to find all the stuff. The
exactly.
Witness tree or whatever you go by.
Hopefully, in a newer subdivision, you've got other monuments, other centerline monuments or right-of-way monuments there, so the information is a little bit better that way.
And
so,
who knows in 20 years what state law will require for monumentation? I mean, that's the other thing.
Sure.
So.
Just so long as
they may adopt your thing.
That's right. Good. Yeah.
State may say, wow, Josephine County, look at what they did. They're not in the way.
Well,
they're covering their butt if something does happen.
Are there any other portions of this that...
from a surveying standpoint, no. It's just the monument cases and the Carsonite pose.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I guess it's maybe just a more global comment. What we're doing is not looking to be in the way of development or put regulations. We're trying to not socialize costs, because really that's what happens if we don't put enough. If we say, hey, 4 inches of road base is enough, whoops, it was 8. Yeah, it's Public Works that redoes that road sooner than later, but that's really all of us. So it's not like we're throwing up boundaries, but, you know, you see study after study saying a typical house brought in an urban setting pays like $10,000 in SDCs, adds $25,000 lifetime cost to the infrastructure. It does not pay for itself. We're just trying to make sure that there is some fence there to keep everything from becoming a socialized cost down the road. Because that's what does happen if things aren't built to a standard.
I understand having things built to a standard. I also want to make sure that our standard isn't...
It's got to be defensible, absolutely. And there's the economics of, yeah, does it cost too much to build one place versus another? Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why when I do go through, and the exception, again, being the survey stuff, because it was kind of a last minute. The other items, you know, I've went through the local agencies, and we're right in the average. I mean, I'm trying not to be on the low end, because that's typically, you know, one of the, you know, coastal counties. And but I definitely don't want to be on the high end either. So I've been trying to pick an area kind of in the middle.
So. Well, one of the things that happens with SDCs is that, and I'm just going to throw this out there, because entities always think, okay, well, I'm gonna put a system development charge on there to develop the system, you know, countywide. But I'm going to say, well, in 20 years from now, we're going to have to do that all again. So I want to charge that developer for that now. And over across the pond, it got so ridiculous. We went from 385 building permits to 6 because of SDC. A good part of it was because of system development charges. And we did a study over there and found out that Grand Pass was way off base. And that's why Central Point was building, Roseburg was building, Eagle Point was building, Grand Pass was not. And it was part of because of system development charge. So we have to be real careful on our developer to make them pay for everything. When you get to Home Depot, they had to do, we do 5 major intersections that had nothing to do with Home Depot. 3 of them did. And so there, you know, we got to be real careful with this. So,
but again, devil's advocate, the city's going to be going back asking all of us for $22 million for a bigger sewer plant.
But yeah. I'm also looking at Home Depot. What do they pay in property taxes all year long?
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
And then what do they bring back to the community? Yeah, the money goes elsewhere, but there's all that the employment opportunities all here. We have to look at the big picture, not just infrastructure and who's paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would pay to have Mill Street because I use Mill Street. I don't use it to go to Home Depot, but I do use Mill Street to travel about.
You know, they have the best lights in town. They actually, they actually change. I've just seen.
The sensors?
just don't go more than about 15 miles an hour.
Kidding. Didn't say the road was good. I just like the lights.
But it won't flood.
Yeah, it won't flood.
But just along that line, we just got to be careful from the development standpoint that it, you know, because it pencils out. So that developer, it pencils out. If it doesn't work at today's marketplace when it gets done, they aren't going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't force them to do it. You can say, well, somebody will come along. But guess what? We've got an awful lot of empty lots in Grants Pass where prior administration said, well, somebody will come along. And look at what other city do you go to where there's a lot in front of Home Depot that's empty and nobody's interested? Why? You have to ask yourself why.
Now,
so we're just, you know, just getting along. I think we're okay. On these, I like alternatives. You know, like when we get to, and, you know, we get to our driveway separation, because that's a chapter in there I have some concern about. I don't want those coming to the board. I want you guys at your level to be able to say, you know what, that makes perfectly good sense for me.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go back to national standard. You can go to the UN for a global standard, for Pete's sake. But I want us to be local here and have the ability to understand what that person's trying to tell us and say, okay, we're going to adjust that right here because that's how it works for Josephine County. It doesn't work for Deschutes, and it certainly doesn't work for Lake County or whatever. I'm not interested in what the national standard is. It's if I drive out there and you drive out there and say, you know what, I can see this is going to work just fine.
But nothing in here is a national standard.
Okay. Well, I know we were talking about that.
Yeah, everything here is less than the national standard.
Okay. But I still want us to have that flexibility. I want your department to have that flexibility. I don't know if that's the proper terminology.
It is there. Neither of the two that went to the board had to go to the board. The applicant chose not to go through the process
that
the board adopted in 2005.
But I want confidence, Chuck, to be able to say when that guy says, I'm going to bring this to the board, to say, you know what, why don't you and I walk out to the public works, and then you get your
opportunity.
They
don't even tell me. They just.
I'll just interject here.
I had just this last week had a very productive meeting with Chuck and a project engineer on a project out on Pinecrest. And the three of us sat down. Well, actually, Eric was there as well. So there's all four of us in there. Very productive meeting talking about just these very same things, these access standards for the driveway locations, and looked at two different options and the two engineering minds, you know, discussing the things that, the criteria that has to be met, you know, to address, the, you know, the safety of the individuals there. And Chuck was very open and working with us there. And so I felt that it was a great meeting. And, took that back to the owner of the property there and was pleased with the outcome. And we have to do some more things on our part, you know, on behalf of the developer there to accommodate that. But it wasn't like, nope, this is what you're going to do. There is no deviation from this. That, you know, Chuck was very open to, you know, discussing, you know, viable options to make that all work. A couple different areas for that project.
Well, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the fact that we have six engineers on board.
No, we actually have two licensed engineers.
So
we have six people in engineering.
Right.
Okay, so we have two engineers on board. I want to hear what the engineer's idea is to solve a problem. Not me coming in there and you saying, no, that can't happen. I want to know then, if you tell me, no, that can't happen, then I'm going to expect within a week for you to come back. That can't happen, but this right here is probably a way to get almost the same thing done and get it done safely. That's what I'm looking forward to from an engineering standpoint. And I don't know if I'm asking for something that can't be done. Well, I can't believe that.
Frankly, that's exactly what was happening. Unfortunately, we were under that 150-day timeline with planning. Now that with Julie's new protocol of his attachment, we've got a three-year window where they're going to have to play ball or they're not going to move anywhere. Well, you know, they will come in and have to have that negotiation and say, what works for everybody?
But what happens when they don't come in to talk to me
at
all?
Well,
and they just go to the board saying, I'm just going to take my shot with the board, and if I win the appeal, I'll get my money back.
Then they come to the board, and I want to have the confidence to say, you know what, why don't I go in and talk to Chuck with you? Because, you know, if they're telling me...
Have that right before they come to us in a hearing. Yeah, it's part
it
of
would
the
have changed.
Well, the other thing that happened, for instance, on the one on Tequila Road, because I was involved in that, I'll share that. You know, when we... It was a total shock to us, the requirement that came through. It wasn't talked about in the pre-application, and we talked about that in the appeal. And it came through as a requirement as part of the planning approval. Well, you've got 12 days to file an appeal on that, you know, based on planning standards there. And so it was like, well, you know, and that was where the applicant wanted to go right away. And I was out of it to some degree at that point there, but I mean, they felt like, oh, we got to get an appeal or else we're going to be stuck with this, you know, requirement here. And so,
Change, or is it still 12 days?
It's still 12 days as far as
fire appeal. Can we change that so we have time for negotiation?
That's state law.
Is it not? Yeah, and I don't know.
The appeal responses are set by state law.
I believe it is in planning.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, but you know. For whatever reason, you know, is that enough time to come up with a decision, you know, to meet and things like that?
But with Julie moving our comments now as an attachment that basically says you will work with Public Works to get or to put this into their standards, that's now a three-year window, as my understanding.
Yeah, the difference being, though, if we modify too much, then they have to go back to planning to modify it.
Right.
But on the 12-day thing, even during that 12 days, they still could have come in and talked to me. And they chose not to. So, you know.
Between the road standards and the change in protocol of planning, I you won't see a driveway. Not under those circumstances anyway. I'm not going to say it's never going to happen again, but I...
Oh, anything's going to happen.
Yeah, but there's been a couple of changes.
Because I know there's a lot of angst mm-hmm. and things like that happen. I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want, you know, my intent... is for us to work with every contractor and try to find a real reasonable solution to it and not just fall back on just say, because I can fall over here, I'm going to do it and I'm going to stay there and I don't care what you say.
But
that's where the negotiation comes in, and we need to encourage that rather than disagree.
Right. But I hope the board also understands there will be a potential lot out there that you can't
develop. Oh, yeah, you're not going to catch them all.
No,
so, no doubt.
That's
that.
Fine. I just want to...
Yeah, no, I get that.
I think my example is like the last 11 years we've had 400 new driveways added.
Yeah.
398 of them the board hasn't seen. Unfortunately, you saw two in
saw
three
two.
Months.
And, you know, but that's just... And that's going
to
happen.
I'd love to get 400, but I can't sit here and promise it.
So, my intent
is to make sure that everybody works together trying to get these things projects done, rather than trying to figure out ways that can't get done. How can we get them done?
And I think just to confirm what you're saying is the audit response, saying that we can improve some customer service opportunities, and so looking at some ways to do that. At the same time, we as a board don't want to disregard the burden of responsibility that falls on the engineer's shoulders of saying, I need to keep my community safe, because that is important to us as well. So we just need to try to find a way that we do it with excellent customer service, keeping safety in mind, and finding a way to find for alternatives that will get us to the right goal. So we don't take lightly what you're trying to achieve and understand that is a significant responsibility, and we don't want to diminish the safety of our community. So we totally understand that as well. But oftentimes our role is to make sure, are we standing in the gap against bureaucracy for the sake of bureaucracy? That's where we can come in and say, we're hearing from the people that elected us to say, these rules don't seem to be making sense for us. How can we get through those? So I do know... So where does that leave us for this plan for right now and where we're going? Is it ready to go forward, or do we need to make some amendments before bringing it
to admin? Yeah, I need to make the amendments that we talked about. I do need a little bit of formatting cleanup on there, too. Okay. I did send you an email about the definitions.
Yes.
And I'm fine taking them out. They were just copied over in 2005 from the Rural Land Development Code. I didn't go through to see if any of them had changed. I wasn't aware of any changes in definitions.
And I apologize. I understand having definitions in. I don't have a problem with having definitions in.
And
I have to give credit. That's how I knew what ASHTO stood for, is because I read your definition.
Well, I think the definition is a real necessary aspect. It clarifies for the guy that moved up from California, his idea of a roadway or maybe all the other different things. So it clarifies what we are about in Grosbeak County, what you guys are using for definitions. They need to apply them to the
same. I did not mean to insinuate take definitions out. I thought my question was more related to were these here already? Was it what was being changed, that kind of stuff. Right. So I don't want them removed. They do help clarify for things.
For everybody involved.
And I can't take extra credit. I have to acknowledge.
I'll give you the extra credit. Anyway.
All right. Well, I'd rather have this to be where it's ready to go forward before we go to admin.
Yeah.
So I'm not in so much of a rush that we don't put forward what you think is the best product that you feel ready to present on.
Okay.
I'd rather you feel confident that this is what you want to present, and then we bring it back.
Okay.
I would rather
do it that way, pull it back for right now, give Chairman Hare an opportunity to weigh in, because I'm sure he's going to have some things to say, and then we'll correct it rather than you get it corrected to Commissioner Morgan. We all agreed on this, and it's like, boy, you missed this or you missed that. So
are we going to be then another Tuesday workshop then in a couple weeks?
I think that would be important.
Is a couple weeks appropriate? Do we need to put it out further? How much time do you want to work with Peter and also to work with what pieces that you need?
I think the pieces that I need to clean up, I mean, most of it's just formatting stuff, so that's not a big deal. I'll take a look at the definitions, and the definitions only apply to the standards. If they're different than the Rural Land Development Code, as a resolution.
Oh, that's right. That was
it. Would override the ordinance? Is that right, or which one am I looking for?
Ordinance overrides the resolution.
Okay, so the Rural Land Development Code is an ordinance then.
So maybe putting that in there. At what level do we...
Like if there's a conflict between the two, this one will supersede or the
definition. Why do we have conflicts?
Like that, I think I'd write that in.
Julie goes in and even if I did the definitions today and then she comes in next week and changes one of the definitions through an adopted process, then I'd have to go back through and edit this as well.
Every board order becomes two.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess that's a question of
I could put a little thing at the beginning and just saying, you know, these definitions only apply as applicable to this document.
This document.
You still need to look at definitions in the rural development
code for the rural.
It may differ from the rural development code.
Yeah.
Also, they would probably.
But it'd be nice if our definitions were actually consistent.
If they met.
Oh, yeah. But again, if Julie changes or if I change something specific like ASHTO.
As long as you don't change the intent of what you're trying to say there by through the definitions there.
Well, and here we're
planning
getting
definition
the hearings.
Tries to put something different over it than what you're. Yeah, right.
Well, and I guess we need to be intentional that if those definitions are being amended, that you guys are consulted in that process and you're not left out of it. So. All right. Well,
and working with Peter, I mean, if we're taking them out except for as a reference for an if situations like the monument boxes, then I mean that's just a matter of a few words in there and then cleaning up a little language.
As far as any fees and things like that, I guess I envision that for something down the road in the future, and that would give us more time to look at it. But now, if he just wants to,
I understand
that you want to go ahead and just adopt this. The survey aspects, the monument boxes, and the Carsonite posts, he just wants to implement those as standards for installation should they occur, but they are not a shall be required.
They're not a requirement, but if you are putting them in,
we're putting them in house, or if I'm contracting out for somebody to put them in, then I would have something to hand them. So this is how
you're going
to
do it.
So you're going to work with Peter to get that language done, and Peter, you're going to let us know when you have given
at some
your
point
stamp
in time,
of approval.
Okay. Yeah. As far as this,
when it meets something that you think is. Achievable.
So did, looking at those two pages that I typed up of the basic outline of the changes, did you have any other comments on any of that?
It is, there you go. So if you want to, it's two pages of those if you want to.
And I don't think you had any, except for the two survey ones, I think.
Well, yeah, Ryan.
Yeah. Like I say, I'm always going to question the driveway, the intersection, and all that stuff. But if we can go out and have some flexibility in that. Top deal, use this wherever possible and go from there. But I think that comes in with your being able to sit down with a developer and say, you know what, let's go out and look at that and see if it works.
Yeah, and if you notice, every one of those is less than 660.
It's
so.
Less, yeah. They're all condemned.
Yeah. So you had, and you mentioned the curse and I post drawing, but I think you also had a drawing for the monument box.
Yes. Okay, yeah.
Add that in there.
Okay. I think we're golden.
Any other concerns?
Oh.
Okay. So I don't think you necessarily need another workshop unless it would be appropriate before you bring it to admin, potentially to touch base with Commissioner Hare after he's back, because he has said that he had some things that he wanted to do.
Right.
So it may be that after you touch base with him individually, you can determine if that will suffice or if you need to bring it back.
If he has significant changes, we're going to probably want to meet as a board to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get it done. Then
I'd say we'll probably plan on it, I mean, what's the harm in a 10-minute otherwise?
Before you bring it to admin, make sure you meet with him and get...
Yeah.
And then go from there. So thank you for your work on this. I appreciate your patience in bringing it back.
Oh, not a problem. Sorry, it's not quite as complete. And
no, these are just...
It's a workshop.
Work in progress.
Yeah.
Work in progress for all that.
Awesome. Okay.
Right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you both.
Hour and 45 minutes of your time this morning. I know that's not easy.
It's
so
okay. My boss said it was okay.
So. You didn't even have anybody to entertain.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
There you
go. Don't forget, it's KJO's 60th anniversary day at Fruitdale Grange. So, just saying.
fast crap. Yeah.
It's on the way home. What? Tell me the significance of your Hidden Valley shirt. Do you coach out there? You got kids out there?
I had coach. Yeah, I've got two daughters that have graduated, and I got a son that's still out there. He's a junior this year, and I coached softball for 7 years.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, all I've heard about Hidden Valley has all been good. You know, I mean, I hear some real positive things come out of Hidden Valley.
You have to go up to North Valley then if you want to hear the other.
Tape's still on.
Cover that. Lily, you got to cover the mic.
That mute button.
Cover that mic.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
I hear a lot of good things come out of it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and we got another coach at Hidden Valley, Scott Hyde. Been the pitching coach on the baseball team.
Oh, I didn't know he was doing that.
Mm. He's cool. The last few years he's been cool. Out there. So the best picture I saw this spring was a picture of he in uniform with his little guy out on the field hanging onto his leg, you know, and he's like barely up to his knee, you know, and it's like, okay, another Mustang generation coming up.
Yeah.
So.
No, we've been working on all the field improvement projects out there, you know, the football and the baseball, and then we're right in the middle of the softball field.
They used to call it Serve Grants Pass, but now they call it Converge, I guess, and they were doing projects out on the fields out there.
Yeah, they may have, yeah.
The volunteer group. So I just saw you sporting a school, so I just thought I'd ask you about it. So.
That's why I wore it.
Well, I just want to make sure that the horse people don't take offense to using the word Mustang as your logo.
Oh, you're so funny.
Kind of like Neanderthals talking about the cavemen, huh?
There you go.
Yeah.
So our next agenda item is other items.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. All right, you as well.
Thank you. So I want to let you know that one of the items got added to weekly business session tomorrow is the FAA grants. We had previously in either... I want to say it was in our admin meeting a week or two ago, we told Larry Graves we would bring forward any of these grants right away when they came. So it didn't come through. This one didn't come through admin, but we knew it was coming, and because they have some time frames to get things through.
Okay. So it's coming up tomorrow?
It is. It literally is a 2 or 3 inch thick grant, which is so exciting.
There's a summary in there that we can read.
Yeah. The other thing is we had the meeting with the sheriff on Friday about the ACOs, and as a result, some staff and I are looking at options. So we may be coming back with some just different recommendations. So I wanted to let you know that we are looking at different options and stuff like that. So. Until we really have something more to even offer, I don't want to say much because I don't have much to offer yet, other than we're just looking into what some possibilities are. So, did you have any other items?
Yeah, I want to thank Ryan and his crew out there. I had that roof coming off of the arena out there in big sheets, and it was all over the place, and they've been really, really good about removing anything that could blow off of there in the next 4 or 5 days while we're in going through fair, and then keeping the grounds clean. So appreciate that. But that's something we're going to have to look at. We look at it year after year after year, and one of these days we have to make a decision on that arena. So Peggy and I have been talking about it, and Ryan, so we'll get something put together.
All right.
But fair's on. I got roped into your Wednesday, and I'm Thursday.
Nice. I'm sorry. And then your reunion.
Yeah, no problem. I give them 4 hours on Thursday, and we'll be just fine. They'll keep me out of the reunion. People's there.
I'll be there Thursday, but I'll be there with kids and all that kind of stuff. So, all right. Well, if there's nothing else, we will be adjourned at 10:48 a.m.